Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's some nice old timey religious music there. Thank you, Elkie. Welcome to every one of you this morning. It's lovely to have you here in this beautiful beach weather like spring break. Isn't it gorgeous? You have to appreciate it before the summer comes. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in the first hymn, hymn 346, Come Sing a Song with Me. It's in the blue hymnal.
Good morning. My name is Lois Brown, and I am this morning's lay worship leader. I welcome you all to Wildflower Church, a Unitarian Universalist congregation. Sharing this worship space with loving Christian neighbors means that some of the worship symbols, like this cross above us, adorn our space. While Unitarian Universalism has its roots in liberal Christianity, today we believe that religious thought benefits from new insights and perspectives beyond any one religious tradition. We can find profound meaning from various religious sources, our personal experiences, and we can draw inspiration from the arts. We are all encouraged here to develop a philosophy of life while being open to new insights and sources of meaning in our lives. This morning, a special welcome to our first time and returning visitors. Please be sure to join us for coffee and conversation in the community room across the quad over here after service this morning. As we note in our orders of service, if you need an assisted hearing device, they are available in the foyer. If you'd like to use one, please see a greeter and they will help you. Unitarian Universalists begin our services by lighting a chalice, a symbol of our faith. This morning, Francis Osborne will light our chalice. Thank you, Francis. If you would, please join me in our chalice lighting words, which are in your order of service. With the kindling of this flame, we affirm our commitment to accept life's gifts with grace and gratitude and use them to bless the world in the spirit of love. Now, let's take a moment to greet those around us, especially ones we may not know. While I know this is a favorite part of the service for most of us, I will encourage those conversations to continue in the community room after service today. If you would, please join me in our responsive reading this morning. It's the Wildflower Covenant of Right Relations, and it's in your order of service. The Spirit in me welcomes the Spirit in you, in all our wholeness and imperfection. We celebrate our connections and our differences. We care for one another and ourselves. We listen to others with respect and open hearts, intending to understand. We speak to others with respect and kindness, intending to be understood. Thus do we commit in covenant. So we commit to be in covenant and willing to be called back into covenant. And thank you for getting the line I missed in my script this morning.
I was informed yesterday that longtime member Richard Pruitt died. He had been ill for a while. He was in hospice care. But our thoughts go out to Richard's family, particularly his wife, Margaret. I'd like to invite children of all ages forward for the time for all ages. We come from all directions. And it is for all ages. You don't need to wait at the back. Someone's still making up their mind. Come on, Zyla. Good morning, everyone. Is everyone sleepy this morning because of the clocks went forward? We're going to see a lot of people arriving late this morning. You don't even have a clock. So how did you get here, Rufus?
See,
you what? You don't have a clock?
I just look on my iPad.
Yeah, and that goes forward. I'm so old-fashioned, am I?
I have a clock over in that part too.
Ah. See, you don't even know what a clock is, do you? But you'll be funny. You see, when we finish our service at the recessional, all these people will be coming in an hour late. It's going to be kind of funny because we'll be going two directions. But this morning's service, I'm going to talk about universalism. You know, we're a Unitarian Universalist church. And if you look at the symbol at the front of the order of service, everyone who's got it, you see, can you describe it to me even?
Can I tell you something?
Yes, Evan.
You were helping with those.
You helped fold them. I saw that. Thank you very much, Evan. And I think your mum helped as well, didn't she? Thank you, Michelle, wherever you are. There she is. But you see that symbol? See how there's two circles? And what?
The chalice.
And the chalice is a symbol of our faith. But do you notice how it's kind of off-center?
There's a fire on top of it.
What was that, sorry?
There's a fire.
It is a fire on top of it. It doesn't show up as well in black and white. But the fact that the chalice is off-center, the old symbol for the Universalist Church was a circle. And you know, we are made up of two churches that came together, the Unitarian and the Universalist, and that's what the two circles are. But the Universalist used to have a cross, and it was off-center. It wasn't centered. And the reason for that was they thought there was room for all religions. And even though they grew out of Christianity, they wanted to be open to all religions. So they moved the cross off-center. And that's why our chalice is not always centered, because there's always room for other religions and other ideas. So that's a symbol. But I want to talk about the Universalist side of our tradition. I want to talk about this very special woman called Clara Barton. Have any of you heard of Clara Barton? You don't even know who she is. She's not that. She should be well known, and she's not. So that's why I'm going to talk about her. But so she lived in the 19th century, and when she lived, women weren't allowed to do a lot of things that men were allowed to do. But her siblings were kind of mischievous. They taught her to ride barebacked horses when she was five, and she would just hang on to the mane of the horse as it would gallop. Now, you wouldn't think that would help her. Wait till the end, Rufus, okay? And so you wouldn't think this would help her, but it really helped her later in life, because what she saw during the Civil War, the American Civil War, where a lot of people were getting hurt and dying, she decided that she needed to help them. And she tried to get money, but no one would give her any money, so she used her own money to help these soldiers that were coming back wounded. But then she found out from the doctors coming back from battlefields that they were running out of supplies in the battlefields. So she went and raised money, and she raised enough money to have five wagon loads of supplies, and she took them to the battlefield. And the soldiers were amazed, because the soldiers had never seen a woman in the battlefield. But she would go around, and she was, you know, there was different sides of the war, but she cared for soldiers on both sides of the war, because she said, I have no enemies. And she became known as the angel of the battlefield. Because for two reasons. One, she was really caring and would look after. Thank you very much, Zyla. She was very caring to soldiers, and her touch, they felt, was healing. But the other thing that she did was she got these supplies, and no one knew how quite she got these supplies. And so they thought she was an angel, because she would just produce things. But then after the war, she ended up hearing of this organization called the Red Cross. Now, the song that the choir just sang was about a tsunami that hit Japan 6 years ago in 2011, and that caused a lot of damage. And the Red Cross was one of the organizations that went in and helped people. You know, they would provide food, they would provide shelter, they would provide medical care in disasters. Well, Clara Barton, after the Civil War, she founded the American Red Cross, and that still exists today. Like when there's disasters, like rivers flooding or the floods in Katrina a number of years ago, the Red Cross went in there to help people, and they helped people all over the world. But Clara Barton did that because she thought one of her religious duties as a Universalist was to love all people and to take care of all people. And she worked for the Red Cross until she was 83 years old. That's even older than me. And she was working for the Red Cross. So she was just an amazing woman who did a lot of great things to help people. And one of the best things I liked about her was she didn't pick sides. If someone was wounded or someone was hurt, she took care of them, no questions asked.
And I think that really shows some of the best aspects of a universalist faith. Hi, what was that?
Why can't she be 900 years old?
Well, you know, people's health deteriorate. Like, I just, when I lit that candle for this member of a congregation who died, he was quite old as well. And so people get ill. But she lived to her, I think she lived to her 90s, which was a good age back in the 19th century. It's a bit more common now. But thank you for your question. Rufus, you've been very patient. Do you have a question?
No, I have to say something.
What would you like to say? You're going to say the story today. Thank you, Sean and Esmeralda. You better make it good. Well, thank you so much for listening, and it's time for your religious education class and your story today. Thank you, Rufus. Well, just go with Penny, and that'll be fine. Yeah, you can go. I think you'll all be together.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Matula, and me along with Dagmar Greeter are the fundraising committee for Wildflower. So this morning we were asked by our board president to try and be funny. So here it goes. Why did the UU chicken cross the road? Because we're about to talk about fundraising. Seriously, Wildflower is not only our spiritual home and support for personal growth, but also we do so much in our Austin community. From talking to Austin City Council and our state Congress people to support issues that are part of Wildflower core values of equality, justice, and love, to working one-on-one with individuals that are most vulnerable in our community. Our facilities are used for so many different great causes, workshops, and classes, and some of which you may not even be aware about. Just take a look at our event page on wildflowerchurch.org. And all of this is done for free, and it's fully supported, at least mostly supported, by donations from members and friends of Wildflower Church. So in order to help with this, with donations, we're putting on our Wildflower Spring Fundraiser House Concert. And you'll see in your order of service a little flyer with all the information. We have a great band that's going to come out and play for us. It's the Meddlers, which are part members from the Austin Lounge Lizards. And it's going to be March 26th at 5:30 at Dagmar and Terry's house. And so please look at your flyer to find out all the information. And I hope that you take this flyer with you and share it with friends and family that may not be involved with Wildflower currently, but to help us to spread the word and to spread the justice, love, and the joy that Wildflower brings. So in order to kick off our fundraiser fun, we have Michael and Michelle. They're going to do a little ditty for us.
Thank you, Michelle.
No problem.
I want you to know before we begin that Michelle and I have been rehearsing this since now.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a hole in our budget, dear Michelle, dear Michelle. There's a hole in our budget.
We'll fill it, dear Michael, dear Michael, dear Michael.
Well, what shall I fill it, dear Michelle, with what shall I fill it, dear Michelle, with what?
With money, dear Michael, dear Michael, dear Michael, with money, dear Michael, money.
But I don't got no money, no money, Just how should I make it, dear Michelle, just how should I make it, just how should I make the money?
Sing a song and make money, dear Michael, sing a song and make money, dear Michael, sing a song.
What song should I sing then, dear Michelle, what song should I sing then? Dear Michelle, what song?
There's a hole in the budget, dear Michael, dear Michael. There's a hole in our budget, dear Michael.
A big hole.
Thank you. The president never asked me to be funny. I've actually got some not nearly as entertaining announcements, but hopefully just as important. June 21st this year in New Orleans is the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly, which is quite an amazing event, and we're really trying to encourage as many people as possible to go. We are talking about connecting with some of the other Unitarian Universalist congregations, renting a bus to keep down the travel cost. If anyone is interested, then please contact me or contact Lois, is going to be coordinating it. We're also planning the week after to be involved with the Center for Justice and Renewal, which is a community ministry in New Orleans, which uses an anti-racist, anti-oppressive lens to try and revitalize areas, neighborhoods of New Orleans still suffering from the catastrophe of Katrina. So please contact me. We'll be hearing more about it. There will be an announcement. General Assembly is an amazing, fun, exhausting event. And can anyone who's been to General Assembly just raise their hands so people can... Please contact any of these people, look around. And it's really a great event, and it's a great way of getting inspired and energized about the important meaning, community, and justice work that Unitarian Universalism does. We'll also, the other announced last week, and we'll be continuing with in April, we'll be starting some new small group ministries. Dee Adams is standing at the back. She has got a list, and she will be coming around fellowship time, or please seek her out or contact me. We'll be starting a number of small groups at various times, depending on the number of people we get. These are groups of about 8 to 10 people that will meet and explore some of the profound, deep, meaningful spiritual questions that many of us wrestle with. It's a great way of connecting with newer people in the congregation and also helping us explore our spirituality in community. And then the final announcement is on March 29th, one of our church members, Janet Spencer, is part one of the organizers of this event about the worst of times. This is going to be at 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock on the state capitol. They're going to be reading from Patricia Miller's book, The Worst of Times, which talks about the struggles many women and family had before abortion was legalized. They will be doing readings from her book on the state capitol. Janet Spencer is looking for information, looking for people who are willing to be readers or help with that event. We are recognized as a reproductive justice congregation. This is part of our work. Abortion is a complex issue, and we believe that it is best left to the conscience and ethics of the woman involved. And this event is in support of that. As we know, much of it is under attack here, and our second offering next week is going to Planned Parenthood of Texas. Those are the announcements. Thank you.
Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as you ever can. At this time this morning, the offering will be gratefully received. If you are a first-time visitor at Wildflower, we ask that you let the basket pass. Your visit here is gift enough.
Thank you.
Thank you for your gifts and generosity. I invite you now to join me in the spirit of meditation and reflection. This is a universalist meditation written by Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker. I invite you to take a breath in and a breath out. Breath in. There is a love breathing out, holding us. There is a love holding all we love. There is a love holding all. We rest in this love. Hold all who have lost loved ones in this love. Hold all who struggle with hunger in their everyday lives in this love. Hold all who live with violence in their life in this love. Hold all who live in fear because of their immigration status in this love. Hold all who are discriminated against because of their gender or gender identity in this love. Hold all who are persecuted because of the color of their skin in this love. Hold all who are threatened because of their sexual orientation in this love. Hold all who live in fear because of their religious beliefs in this love. Hold all who are in need, whether physically or spiritually, in this love. There is a love holding all. I invite you to join me in silence. Hold those people and places in the embrace of love's presence, mystery, and transforming power. Blessed be and amen. I invite you to rise in body or spirit and join me in singing hymn 114, Forward Through the Ages. It's in the blue hymnal.
As Reverend Brian mentioned, I'm going to help organize the trip to GA and to a service trip out in New Orleans. I have been on six trips, that Wildflowers organized over the years, and the first two were to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. The fact that GA is there this year and that the subject of GA is battling, as a religion, racism and helping all of those who are being systemically marginalized, helping them fight against that systemic marginalization, and then being in New Orleans where we have done so much service and so much, found so much love amongst racism, amongst a lot of marginalization. I can't I can't put into words how excited I am for this trip. So I thought I'd share this morning how I got to go on my first service trip, what led me there. On Sunday, September 5th, 2005, I sat in the comfort of my living room and watched as Hurricane Katrina rolled across Gulfport, Mississippi, destroying over 90,000 miles of coastline across Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. And that was bad enough. And then we all woke up Monday morning. Over the next few days, the real horror of the disaster began to surface. People of New Orleans were suffering on rooftops, where they had kicked holes in their own roofs to get out because the water rose so fast. There were people who had been stuck inside the Superdome for almost a week with backing up sewage, violence, rapes, murder, and no care. My heart broke. It broke more than it ever had, and for the first time in my life, I couldn't just feel bad. I knew I had to do something. I was this close to packing up my car and driving out there. I just didn't know what to do. By Friday, we finally started seeing these poor people finally begin to be bussed out of New Orleans to Texas, and then finally to Austin. And I was woken up on Saturday morning to the phone call I had been hoping and praying for. You know, hey, Lois, do you want to volunteer? We could use some help. I've never driven so fast to get downtown. And when I got to the convention center, it was chaos. Donations were coming in faster than imaginable, and the organization was an absolute mess. So, I know this will surprise those of you who know me, I plunged in and took over. I started organizing people, I started putting people into groups, and I started ordering folks around. You guys take this stuff there, you guys take this stuff there, and getting some organization. And we got moving fast. Finally, a couple of hours in, I was able to grab a small group of folks, and we headed back into the area that had been set up as a dormitory for the evacuees. I got several people set up in some jobs, setting up clothes, organizing food, different things, and I started to head back out front. But to do that, I had to walk among the cots. And there were hundreds of cots just set end to end, row by row. There was hardly room in between them to walk. And there were people ready to fill them all. As I was walking through them, I realized I couldn't just walk past all these people. As I looked at them and looked in their eyes, I just started asking, how are you doing? What do you need? Is there anything I can get you? Just individually, one-on-one. And that was the moment that everything changed for me. I got to connect with those individuals who just needed a caring, loving, human connection. The stories that they shared, they shredded and yet healed my heart. I didn't bother anybody who was sleeping, and most of the people, no, I'm fine. But their haunted eyes told a hint of what they had been through. And I did my best to meet every eye, to keep contact, to not look away, to let them know someone heard them, saw them, and cared. I met their gazes with as much openness and love as I could. Finally, I came across a very sweet woman on her own. She had a leg in a cast, just sitting on her cot, looking exhausted. When I asked her, what can I get you? She said, I know it sounds crazy, but I'd love an orange soda. No problem. I went and found her one, fortunately. I came back and handed it to her. She burst into tears crying. It's the nicest gesture anyone's done for me in weeks. I also came across a group of three men, and I asked them what they needed. The youngest, Jimmy, asked if he could use my phone to try to reach his family. They had been bussed out separately, and he had no idea where they were. The oldest one of the group didn't speak much, but the other man, Jose, told me his story. His wife and kids had gone north to get away from the hurricane, but he thought they were ridiculous. He grew up in New Orleans. This was going to be no big deal, so he stayed. Well, he had about 4 minutes, if that, once the water started to rise, to kick a hole in his roof and get out. And he hung onto his roof during the worst of the storm and then stayed up there for 2 days. No food, no water, nothing until he was rescued. His family had no reason to believe he was alive, and he had no idea how to contact them since his phone with the number where his family was dead. I tried several things to get it working, including taking the battery out of someone else's phone. The woman who owned that came running up and, "Don't you be stealing my stuff." I told her what had been happening and the change immediately. She was, "Here, use my phone. Here's the battery. Take it, whatever you need." I mean, she opened up immediately, and it was a beautiful moment to watch a blossoming of love in amongst complete strangers. There were so many other stories. The woman who needed help finding some pants because the ones she was wearing were shredded and barely staying on, and they reeked of urine that she must have been sitting in for days. There was the tiny man who just wanted some soap to wash his face. There was the woman and her young toddler where they were desperately trying to find some shoes that would fit her feet because she was just cut up. Her feet were just shredded. And there was the man who had to get out really fast and couldn't save his 17-year-old parrot, and that he was sure drowned. So many of these people, devastated, smelling of urine and worse that they had been forced to live in, they were all gracious to a fault. They weren't angry. There was no angry word mentioned. It was just continued moments of kindness and generosity. That experience of universal love and grace over that week that I spent volunteering and helping these people inspired me to be one of the very first people to raise their hands when it was suggested that Wildflower take its first service trip. I'd never done anything like it, but I couldn't imagine not going. The desire to give continued hope and courage in difficult situations is still stronger than ever in me, and I hope that I will continue to be a light for people in times that theirs has gone out.
I feel the need to say something because Lois's words were so moving, and our next piece of music is very lighthearted. So get ready for a little change of pace. This is a song called Give Me That UU Religion. Some of the lyrics were written by our own Gay Patterson, and it goes through the history of, it names some famous people who were UUs. Lois, thank you for your moving words.
I think that was the worship equivalent of reading Facebook, where one story you're reading about this terrible tragedy and then the next is picture of puppies. And life involves both of those. And here's a reading that speaks to that it's from Aiku, who was a 15th Japanese Zen Buddhist monk. Every day, priests minutely examine the law and endlessly chant complicated sutras. Before doing that, though, they should learn how to read the love letters sent by the wind, the rain, the snow, and the moon. Those are the words of Aiku. Well, like talking of Facebook, like many of you, I've been having a hard time on social media and reading the news. I seem to spend a large percentage of my day angry and disappointed in our political leaders. And anger's not a good place to be. It's certainly not a good place to stay. And there's many good things happening in the world, but there's so much that seems to be happening that goes against what I see as our religious values. I've mentioned before, it's really dangerous to put a political identity at the center of our human identity. It's very important that we keep a spiritual identity at the center. Because if we put a political identity at the center of who we are at this time, we are going to become emotionally exhausted. And we're not going to live into the full humanity of who we are. So I turn to the center of my faith, which is universalism. Now, we are a Unitarian Universalist tradition, but often when people describe us, they don't even get to the Universalist part. They stop at Unitarian part. So if nothing else happens in this worship service, I want you to say Unitarian Universalist and not Unitarian. I've noticed it's around the second or third syllable of Universalist, people stop even pretending to pay attention. But we are Unitarian Universalists, and I know the center of my faith comes more from Universalism, because for me, Unitarianism is more a way of doing religion. It's about that religious freedom to explore. It's that use of reason and experience to find religious meaning rather than tradition and scripture. It's that use of reason and experience. And that is more how to do religion. For me, Universalism has the message that centers me. And what is that message? So I want to go back and talk a little bit history. One of the themes for this spring is reaching back to reach forward. I think one of the best things we can do is use our religious tradition, our deep beliefs and values, to look at the current situation. Now, there's different opinions of how important Universalism is. Some people, like myself, see it as the way forward for Unitarian Universalism, and other people, including Unitarian Universalist ministers, think it's answering a question no one's been asking for 100 years. So that doesn't sound too promising, and so at the risk of being spineless, I believe both of those to be true. To understand what Universalists thought, we need to go back 200 years. That's kind of how history works. And back then, the Orthodox Christian view was that only a small, select few people would get into heaven. Heaven and hell were real places at this, in this thinking. And only a small few people would get into heaven, selected by the grace of God. Deeds didn't matter. And most would be damned to spend eternity in hell. And that was a really, really fearful religion. God was a very judgmental God in this. And the Universalists resisted that. Now, Universalism had been a strain in Christian thinking from early times, but no real Universalist movement had ever formed until North America at the end of the 18th and the beginning of the 19th century. And Universalism saw that all people would be saved, universal salvation, all people would get to heaven. Now, the ideas of heaven and hell are obviously outdated. Most of us, or as literal places, most of us moved away from that. But what the Universalists did say, that we all had this common destiny, we had this radical egalitarianism, that we were all destined for the same place. But the important shift there, rather than the idea of heaven and hell, was this idea of God as a loving God rather than a judgmental God. That was a radical shift at the time. And Universalism became very popular. In the 1840s, it was the fifth largest religion in the U.S. We had 700,000 people identified as Universalists. To give you an example, today, Unitarian Universalism is about 200,000. And the population is 20 times larger. So that would be the equivalent of 14 million people now. Now, Universalism really spoke to many who were in the lower, less wealthy, more rural communities, whereas a Unitarian was definitely a more well-educated, formal, elite religion. And that appealed, because if you think of the idea of all people being saved, this radical egalitarianism, that was going to appeal to more people, because you can imagine the elite always saw themselves as the elect who were going to get into heaven. So this radical egalitarianism ran throughout the Universalist movement. As I mentioned, Clara Barton, who started the Red Cross, was driven by this radical egalitarianism to do the work for both the Union and Confederate armies during the Civil War. And Hosea Ballou was an amazing man. He was kind of considered the father of Universalism. And Hosea Ballou in the late 1700s, early 1800s, really coalesced the Universalist movement around his thinking. And he was a ride around as a circuit rider, you know, preaching in street corners. And I often think we should revitalize that. Myself and Kyle and a bunch of other ministers should go on the Altoff in the frontage road and start debating points. I think that's what the circuit riders used to do. I think that could be a lot of fun. I think we should do that. But, you know, he got into these debates with other ministers, and a Methodist minister once said to him, "But Brother Ballou, if I was a universalist and knew I was going to get into heaven, then I could hit you over the head, steal your horse and saddle, and I'd still get into heaven." And Ballou's reply was, "If you were a universalist, such a thought would never have occurred to you." And there's a deep point to that. His point there is that it was through love, the love of all humanity, the love of other people, that people behaved well. Because the threat of hell never stopped people behaving badly throughout history. So the idea that if we are called to love others, that's what will call us to live well. And he's also an interesting character, Hosea Ballou. He was once talking to this man whose son was badly behaved. He would womanize and go into the town and get drunk, and his father was disappointed in his son. And so Hosea Ballou said, "Well, I'll tell you what, how does your son come home at night when he's drunk?" He said, "Well, he walks up this path." And he said, "Well, I'll tell you what, you and I will wait in that path and we'll build a big fire. And when your son comes up, we'll grab him and throw him on the fire." Now, this is one of the most profound thinkers in our movement. And the father said, "How can I do that? I love my son. I would never do that." And he said, "If you as a finite creature love your son so much, why do you think an infinitely powerful God would punish us to eternal damnation?" And so he really held God to a moral standard. And that's quite a radical move at the beginning of the 1800s. He held God to a moral standard because he felt it was unjust, it was immoral for an infinitely powerful God to punish a finite creature like a human being for finite sin. And he was also he speaks to the freedom and openness of our religion. One time he was preaching at John Murray, another famous Universalist church. And John Murray's wife, Judith Sargent Murray, the famous author, was in the congregation and she was listening to it. She did not like what Hosea Ballou was preaching. So she notified the choir master to pass a message. So when Hosea Ballou finished speaking, the choir master got up and said, "Mrs. Murray would like you to know that what was preached in this pulpit today is not what's normally preached here." And so Hosea Ballou got up and said, "You will please listen to what my brother and sister have said and take note of it," and continued on. And I think it shows that he was willing to have these debates. He was willing to have this freedom of different expressions, which is still important to our religion at the moment. He was driven by this belief of the love of all humanity. He was not driven by his own ego. And I think that's very important. Because I know I struggle now when I look at our political situation. I sometimes think that, are our political leaders just doing this to annoy me personally? I sometimes feel that way. It's like, you know, they really did that? The ASB 6 debate about the bathroom bill at the Texas State Senate, it just seemed like a complete waste of time. And it would be comedic if it was not so hurtful to our transgender community. It's insulting. And I don't know how many of you, I know some of you were there, but if you actually look at the debate, these people were pouring their heart out about how threatening this was. And then the politicians voted 7-1 to put that bill forward. And there seemed to be so much with executive orders coming from our president around immigration status, around repealing health care. There's so many things that are very upsetting to me right now, and I'm struggling with it. So what does universalism say about holding all in love? I think we Unitarian Universalists are very good at that up until it really matters. We're really good about looking out for the transgender community who are really suffering now. Now, we're really good at looking for those undocumented immigrants and supporting them. And we deserve that, and we need to do that. That is an important part of our justice. But I think universalism calls us to do something more. It calls us to reach out to those we disagree with. It calls us to reach out in love with those who are pushing policies we don't like, who are maybe insulting us, who are promoting bigotry, who are causing great suffering to people in our congregation. And that is the universalist challenge I think we have. And it's a struggle I'm wrestling with every day since this new administration came in. Can I hold our political leaders in love? And I think it's important I do, because otherwise I'm diminishing my own humanity. If I don't hold everyone in love, if I don't hold those that disagree with me, if I don't hold those who offend me, who threaten me, in love, I'm diminishing my own humanity. And that is a great challenge. And it's not easy. And that's not to diminish the justice work we do. We need to do that. But if you look at the great leaders like Gandhi and Martin Luther King, they never hated the people they were opposing. Gandhi always showed concern for the British workers who might be impacted by his boycotts. Martin Luther King rarely demonized his opponents. He was able to hold them in love. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying I'm going to be perfect at this, but that is what I believe a universalist challenge calls us to do. So in that vein, I'd like to repeat the meditation that I gave earlier from Rebecca Parker. And I invite you to join me in it. Breathing in, there is a love. Breathing out, holding all. Hold all who disagree with me in this love. Hold all who promote bigotry in this love. Hold all who thwart justice in this love. Hold all who discriminate in this love. Hold all who would ridicule me in this love. Hold all who would threaten me in this love. There is a love holding all. Hold all people in the embrace of love's presence, mystery, and transforming power. Amen. Universalism at its core affirmed that no human being could be separated from God's love. And I think that calls that no people should be separated from our love if we wish to manifest divine love in our community. And I think by manifesting that divine love, that is what will bring healing to our communities, to our country, and to the world. We have to manifest that love. And we, as Universalists, as Unitarian Universalists, or Universalist Unitarians, we put the love of all humanity at the center of religion. We're not an individualistic religion that puts humanity. We put the love of all humanity at the center of our religion. And the idea is not to get people into heaven, it's to get heaven into people. Let's put our energy into this. We're not here to save other people's souls. It's to grow our own soul, which may even save our own soul as we reclaim our full humanity. Can we reach out in love to those who show us no love in return, who disagree with us, who ridicule us, and even threaten us? Can we truly hold all in love? This is not an easy religion. It's a challenging religion. And Jesus said in the Christian scripture, love your enemies. I think that is a universalist notion of love, which is so challenging, but yet may be the salvation and healing of our society. If we truly believe that and embrace its meaning and make it manifest in our everyday life, then we may make the world a little better today than it was yesterday and a little better tomorrow than it is today. I think that will can be salvation and healing for our planet. I invite you to rise in body or spirit for a final hymn, 1074, Turn the World Around. It's in the teal hymnal. So, who's going to turn the world around if not us? This is a task. I think we're charged at by both the Unitarian and Universalist tradition. And I'd like to finish with some words from Hosea Ballou. If we agree in love, there is no disagreement that can do us any injury. But if we do not, no other agreement can do us any good. Let us endeavor to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Go in love, go with love. And let's manifest love to a world that needs healing. Go in peace.